Hi, welcome to the Lighthouse London podcast. We're going to do something a little bit different this episode. One of our founders, Tom, recently got back from travelling in India, found that there was a very interesting situation with their currency, and we thought it'd be quite interesting to do some current affairs.
Nice, bit of a change.
Yeah.
Introduce yourself as well.
Sorry, hi, I'm Simon. I've been at Lighthouse for nearly a year now.
First time on the podcast, right?
Yeah, first podcast.
Nice, like it.
Thought we'd go in hot.
Yeah. Investigative reporting.
Exactly, yeah. But, and he's our correspondent from the field, Tom Johnson.
Great. I can't quite hear you.
Okay, Tom, why don't you give us a really quick summary of the situation, why you were there for one thing, and then give us a little summary of what the situation you encountered, you know, the sort of the problems it caused and stuff like that, before we go into it in a bit more detail.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to go to India recently, just a holiday, so no cool. Major reason for being there, but I left Lighthouse for December and swanned off around India, which was very nice.
All right, for some.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys appreciated that a lot. But it was interesting because when I got there, I actually knew already because I'd listened to a Planet Money podcast about this situation. But I think it isn't, or probably is more well reported now, but at the time really wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people had gone there, certainly tourists, and had come across this weird financial situation that's going on over there.
It wasn't massively publicised before. I think you're right. It was when a bunch of people got back from their holidays and told everyone about the problem they'd had buying things.
Which is really surprising because it's quite it's a bold move, certainly, for any nation to do this, and especially one that's developing or whatever you want to call it, like India. So essentially what's happened over there is the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, has taken this step to outlaw a lot of the currency in circulation. So they have 100, 500, 1,000 rupee notes, and overnight, with very little
warning. Which is roughly how much?
100 is £1.20-ish.
Okay, yeah.
1,000 is £12, £15, whatever it is. It's something along those lines. So, and that's, you know, 1,000 is quite a lot of money in India for most people. It's not a rich country, although it has a massive, there's a lot of rich people in India and a lot of very poor people, and there's very little in between. So it's a very
big divide.
Yeah, huge divide. There really isn't a middle class as far as I can make out. It's a very, very strange place, and there's a lot of wealth there, but extreme poverty as well.
Okay.
So almost overnight, the government's done something really bold, which is to essentially outlaw the 500 and 1,000 rupee note. So it's kind of like over here, if you got rid of £10 and £20 notes and 50s, because they're the only ones that are really worth anything over there. So you're just left with fivers and, you know, all your coins, which are essentially useless. And certainly over there aren't worth anything. People don't really use them. So that's a really strange thing to do, and especially something that isn't really communicated very well. So certainly loads of English people that we chatted to and were out there had said that they'd taken all their money out, and on the December the 10th or whenever it was, most of that money then became illegal.
They weren't allowed to use it.
No, so they were stuck with thousands and 500s and essentially couldn't use that money, which is mad, you know, like imagine doing that over here and what effect that would have on tourism and effect on it would have on everyone.
So stop there. One thing, why have they done this?
So the reasoning behind it is to get rid of what they call black money. And essentially that's India's a very cash-based society, so you know, uptake in credit cards, even bank accounts, is really low. I think if you got wealth you'd have a bank account, but a lot of people, I think even people that makes you know serious money, just hoard cash.
It's all still in the mattress.
Totally. I think a lot of people, well, most people don't have a lot of money for starters, so you know, they work in cash because why would you store money in a bank when you don't really have much and you're living day to day on you know, a lot of people live on less than a dollar a day, which is shocking really. And there's a lot of people that don't earn a huge amount of money and just survive on you know an average wage over there, or what we would certainly call a low wage. So the reason was to get what they call black money, and black money essentially is money held in cash, which isn't in the, they know how much money's in, you know, are out there. And black money, as far as I can make out, I don't know exactly, black money is money made by people who are wealthy and aren't paying tax on it. And also it's just illegal money, so there's a lot of fake money out there as well. There's a lot of money to do with crime and, you know, various things out there that really shouldn't be there. So they're trying to cut down on crime and cash being used for that. And they're also trying to get people with wealth who are hoarding cash to declare their income and support the country, the economy. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff they're trying to do. Kind of an interesting take home that I've heard when I was out there, which I'm, you know, not exactly sure on, is that they've got more cash back than actually they thought was in circulation. So this idea of and so the idea was that they'd make this money illegal within the space of a certain amount of time, and I think it was up until the 31st of January 30th of January. How many? I forget how many days are in January. Up until the end of January.
Right.
People go to the bank and they could swap all their 500s and 1000s for...
Oh, they still can?
Well, they can't now. So there was a set time period when essentially everyone in the country could go and exchange their money. So they didn't just make it illegal. You couldn't use them in shops or whatever.
Okay.
But you could go and exchange your cash. And so they've introduced a 2,000 rupee note, mm-hmm. and they keep the old 100s. So there mm-hmm. are still notes to use. But, you know, that's quite a wow. difference. So yeah, people could go along and exchange their money, and the idea is you'd give your cash in, mm-hmm. go into a bank account. They're creating loads of bank accounts for people that don't have any, so you know, massive uptake in putting people into the banking system.
You bank
your
cash to make your account yeah. is now recorded, that kind of thing.
So that's all legal money. Okay. You know, you have to show ID, you have to kind of like prove who you are. Mm-hmm. So from the government side, it's like, it's a nice way of trying to get everything legal and get everything documented. And I think, you know, as you put your money in, I think you're supposed to pay tax on it as well.
It's a very extreme and
yeah, it's an extreme way of doing it. But you can see why, from a kind of government perspective, they're like, this is a brilliant idea. Nothing could ever go wrong. Everyone's going to have a bank account now. It's moving towards, you know, bringing India up in the world. And, you know, you've seen China make big changes in the last 20 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's a very fast growing economy. Big take up in tech, you know, like yeah. it's a very entrepreneurial economy as well. So I think they're trying to fast track India to being, you know, a global force and something that has, like, you know, the foundations in place to let it kind of catch up with the Western world. Mm-hmm. One thing that this change has made is that going out there as a tourist, we turned up with loads of 2,000 notes because it's pretty much all you can get from ATMs.
Okay.
And everywhere you go, you know, I want to go and buy an apple off a stall. I give them my 2,000 note and they either tell me to go and go away because like I'm buying for something for 10 rupees uh-huh. with the 2,000, which like if you've ever walked into a shop and bought something for 50 here,
yeah.
you know, you get laughed at there.
Yeah.
And that's even when you get in change out of 20s.
Yeah.
Or you walk away with all the 100 notes in the world because that's all they've got. So it's a mad situation, really. And I think this kind of idea from the government is a very interesting take on how to go about doing that. But I think it's kind of unsure as to how successful that's been. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, maybe in the long term, people look back and say, wow, you know, that's an amazing thing to have done. But in the short term, it's kind of turned the country into chaos, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we first got there, everyone was moaning about it, and it was really difficult. Like, there are queues for the ATMs every day. Like, you know, when you get to 5 o'clock in the evening, the queue's, you know, 30 people deep for every single ATM you see.
Yeah.
The mad thing is that most ATMs out there don't work. So, you know, not like over here where we've got ATMs on every corner and you can get money wherever you want. You know, you have an ATM sitting in some random place that who knows where it is, and most of them are out of cash, you know.
Yeah.
It really kind of, I think it's interesting to see what would happen if you tried something similar here. So if suddenly we made all this money illegal in mm-hmm. England, it wouldn't cope with it too well, really.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we use card a lot more.
We do.
I don't know what the percentage is.
There are some interesting stats. So I grabbed a copy of India Today out there and did some reading because I found it fascinating when I was there to learn more about why this had happened and what was going on. So, and it compares like some emerging markets and developed markets. So the stats for the UK are that we're 25% cash in most transactions. And actually, I think we're the most.
As opposed to 90-something in India.
Yeah, and India here, it says it's 78, but I think we'd read a report from the New York Times which is suggesting 90, which sounds about right to me because really, you know, there isn't much card use there at all. Mm-hmm. But in the UK, we're 59% credit card transactions, which is pretty high.
Does that include contactless?
Yeah, that would include that. Doesn't include digital payments.
Right.
So I assume like Apple Pay and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's like a 2% of other paper, which I don't know what that means. But
check, maybe?
Yeah,
I don't
know. Check. I think
my grandmother probably still uses check.
Check would make sense because the US is quite 13% on that other paper one. And I think they use checks a lot more than us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, India, you're 78% cash according to this, 7% card and 13% digital.
Okay.
And so the kind of message from the government at the start was, we're going to get rid of black money. Mm-hmm. This is what we're all about. You know, get money into banks, get the economy knowing what's out there, get taxes in from the wealthy. Mm-hmm. And I think they've, because of the way it's gone, they've kind of changed what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And from what I saw on the TVs over there, the news reports saying they're sort of changing their story a tiny bit. And because India is this big growth area for tech, like I was in Bangalore for a couple of days, and Bangalore is meant to be like their Silicon Roundabout kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tech startups.
Oh, more techy than Delhi?
As far as I'm aware, yeah. I don't know much about Delhi, but certainly Bangalore is said to be the kind of hub of startups in India.
Okay.
And being there, you kind of saw a lot of that sort of thing going on, although I'm sure Mumbai, Delhi, and all those kind of big cities have a lot of that stuff going in and on. And certainly when I was in Mumbai, there were people talking about business everywhere, which is quite odd. But you know, but yeah, in Bangalore, we first saw that there are a lot of kind of new startups launching payment systems. So
cool.
I think RuPay is one, which I'm not sure if that's like a credit card type thing or a digital phone based thing. But on a lot of the kind of autos, like the rickshaws, tuk-tuks, whatever you want to call them over there, there are loads of adverts for new kind of e-payment systems. And
do these compare to, I mean, what would they compare to?
Like PayPal, I guess. Okay. I haven't used any of them, you know, so it's kind of hard to know, but they're essentially ways to, like, Monzo, or that kind of thing,
okay,
similar stuff. I assume, I don't know what they all are in detail, but it feels like PayPal's one, Apple Pay type stuff. You know, solutions that are India-based startups, I think funded by the banks over there, so some funded by the government,
right.
Some with big buy-in from the large Indian banks. They're all coming out because obviously it's not working getting people into the banks, and you know there's been a huge number of bank accounts being created in the past 2 months, whatever it's been. But I think they're struggling. So there's like all these entrepreneurs who are thinking, right, well, most people out there have got phones. So even though there's a lot of poverty, you still see people with smartphones, or at least kind of like out of date smartphones, or using them all the time, because it's just a constant hive of activity everywhere you go. People are just up to something everywhere. And basically, you know, there's commerce everywhere. So from stalls selling fruit and veg and knockoff t-shirts and all that kind of stuff. But wherever you go, there's people buying and selling. So I kind of get the feeling that it's a huge entrepreneurial spirit in what goes on in India.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's people just seizing opportunities wherever they can, because it's, you know, everyone's out to make a buck and everyone will do whatever they can. People work so hard over there to like make a daily wage, because there isn't huge opportunity there, but at the same time there is. So I get this idea that kind of like startup mentality has come from that.
Okay.
So there's people like, cool, well, you know, there's this financial situation needs a solution. So there's all these e-commerce or e-payment systems are springing up, and huge push to moving to that. And the government's kind of embracing that.
Now, I was about to say, is the government now claiming that they're trying to move people to these new solutions?
So I think they've gone from like, let's get rid of black money because maybe that's failed, and
yeah.
they've got more money back than they know is out there, which is like, uh-oh, this is really bad, makes us look terrible.
They get a lot less back, don't they?
Well, they know how...
Stashed money and returning.
So they know how much legal tender's out there, and they know how much black money or fake money or whatever it is out there, because I think a lot of fake money comes in from Pakistan and stuff like that, I think I heard.
Right.
And they've got more back. So that's definitely failed on the front of trying to get legal money into banks, and that's what one of the reasons doing it was. So now they're saying, well, that isn't necessarily the aim. What we're looking to do is be a modern economy that that is digital.
Which is what you were saying about bringing them forward and enabling the higher growth levels, that kind of thing.
And there's this idea, or not an idea, there's really bad uptake on having kind of point-of-sale machines in businesses.
Okay.
So there's another stat. So per 1,000 debit cards in the world, Australia has 33.2 machines. It's like the highest I've got in these stats here. UK's 20.
Mm-hmm.
India's 2. So really, and from where I went around, there aren't many at all. Like, you know, if you're in Mumbai, it's fine. You can pay for anything you want with card, really, apart from market stalls and stuff, although a lot of them had them as well. So I'd see people on the street selling stuff, you know, food, and they'd have like a little electronic reader machine.
Like the little iZettle thing that we get here.
Exactly.
You see them in
exactly
markets
like
and
that.
Stuff. Okay.
And I'm not sure whether that's something that's relatively new or something that's been around for a while, but I imagine that's quite a new thing to appear. But certainly the more rural you get, you know, far fewer ATMs, far fewer people even having, you know, knowing what a credit card is or whatever.
Yeah.
And you've got to bear in mind that a lot of people in India are still illiterate. When you get outside of cities, it's a whole different world, and you know, you see abject poverty really a lot of the places. So it's kind of like they're trying to install this system that works well for somewhere like Delhi or Mumbai. Even Bangalore wasn't that developed from this front, and that's a big city, you know. But when you think about how it works in the country, you know, it's really hard to see how that would be effective. So the fact that everyone's familiar with using their phone and it's such a big thing, I think that's maybe a wiser thing for the government to be doing, and I think they're seizing on that opportunity.
Absolutely, yeah.
To say, cool, well, you know, actually it's about being cash-free or cashless or whatever they call it, and they know they'll never completely get rid of cash, as the UK doesn't and everywhere else in the world.
I think you think you're right with the phone thing. Just want to say I've seen some really good specs. I think something like 70% of India has a phone, and nearly a fifth of them are all smartphones.
Yeah,
which is only a little bit behind some from far more developed countries. So it's definitely surprising. A route to go down.
It's definitely surprising on that front, because even the guys on the market stalls and stuff out there selling, you know, really low value goods, they're all on their phones all day long, and they're all like, you know, they've all got better phones than you think they would.
Yeah,
I think I was reading in this article about. They went to a village in some rural area and essentially kind of tried to get the entire village or a small town to adopt electronic payments or debit card payments. So okay. Even the guys driving the autos had like card readers as an experiment, which is okay. Really interesting. And, you know, government funded, so you couldn't really do that nationwide.
No.
But it was, I think they did this in a bunch of different places just to see how it would go. Mm-hmm. And it was really fascinating because it worked really well, although... I get the feeling that the results they're showing are short-term ones and don't take into the bigger picture of long-term results. But what the autos are saying is they got twice as much business because people could pay with cards, which is really fascinating. And a lot of the kind of fruit and vegetables were saying that because people had a card to pay, they'd buy more. So they buy in bulk rather than coming along and buying, you know,
five things. Don't have to carry the cash.
Exactly.
Physical
so,
cash, they
yeah,
can,
exactly.
Yeah,
so having cash for it, and they just come along and buy on card, and they could take more away,
yep.
Like we do at a big shop over here. However, you know, that might mean they don't come as frequently. So who knows if that's like kind of a good stat or not? But the kind of the results there seem to be really promising. Mm-hmm. But how do you roll that out across a country with 1.2 billion people? You know, loads of rural areas that are really hard to get to. The infrastructure isn't there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if anyone's ever been to India, but getting into a car there is like a dicing with death every minute. I mean, it's pretty hilarious once you get used to it. But it's really interesting because it's a country with such problems around infrastructure and all this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. yet trying to adopt this super modern way of approaching finance.
They're sort of skipping a middle stage.
Yeah, it
they're
feels
going
like that.
From more rural straight through to 21st yeah, century.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And whereas we've built up to that by having all of that kind of happen over time, they're trying to do this stuff, adopt this change or push this change really quickly, which is
a challenge, but it also presents huge opportunities to sort of learn from other countries and do it better, do it right.
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of like, I think that the thing that I'm going to be paying attention to is how well this is going to work. And I think the Prime Minister there, Modi, has pushed this through, and it's kind of, I think people are unsure as to whether this will fall flat on its face or whether it will be amazing. So it kind of, it will be his legacy as the kind of the thought over there about him. He's seen as far as I can tell, he's seen as being a really good prime minister.
Okay.
And so he's not kind of, I think people are frustrated by what it's created and maybe annoyed with the government because a lot of stuff over there is pretty badly run, as you might expect of a developing nation's government. I think they're trying to do a lot of stuff, but you know, when you're short of cash and have got a lot of problems in the country, it's hard to know how to solve those things. Mm-hmm. But this, I think, will be seen as his legacy. And in some ways, he could be a huge figure in the history of India.
Okay.
He could be seen as like a Gandhi type person,
where if it works.
He took India out of this black market money issue to being a digital nation. Which is amazing, you know, and if it works, it's such a big deal. He could, I mean, there were some stats I had on how many people have bank accounts, and there's another stat of how many they've created. It's millions, you know, in the past few weeks. So it could be a huge change for the country. But also, if it doesn't work at all, it could be, you know, he tried something massive and it completely failed.
And everyone struggled for
So what happens after they've done this? I mean, like, what's the alternative? They've got rid of all this money. They have introduced a 500 note now, a brand new one that is legal tender, but they were only really appearing rarely when I was there. But if it doesn't work, what do? Do you just bring back all the kind of currency again? Does everyone keep on using cash? Does black money start building up again? What happens to all these kind of tech startups? So who knows what's going to happen?
Well, while not definitely not impossible, I do think, you know, the country's had its fair share of problems and it's done an extremely good job of recovering from all of them and finding solutions. So I think it's pretty inevitable that they'll come out of it with something clever.
I think it might work, you know. You know, there's a lot of challenges to overcome, but when I was over there and we first found out about it, we were like, wow, this is mad. Like, why would you do that?
Oh, you didn't know before you went?
No, well, I actually did. So from that Planet Money thing, I did know was happening. Yeah, but I kind of, I think I'd forgotten about it. Mm-hmm. And got there and people were like, oh, have you heard about what's happening with the currency? And I was like, oh, yeah, actually, I did know that. So, and we changed money at the airport. So got there and got 2,000s and a couple of hundreds maybe, which helped. Because you can't pay for taxis with 2,000s.
Unless you do it the long way around.
Yeah, but getting there and seeing what was going on and having problems of like being tourists and be like, oh, I've only got 2,000, sorry. Mm. And they're like, cool, I want your money, but this is really annoying. You did see the problems it was causing, but by the end of it, you know, the 500s were coming into play. People had been building up cash reserves and knowing they needed hundreds for all this stuff. So one interesting thing as well was we were in Goa experiencing the Goan lifestyle. Yeah, you know, whatever, lying on a beach for a week with loads of English people thinking they were finding themselves. But I was chatting to the people running the hotel there, and they were okay because they had a card reader already, but mm-hmm. a lot of businesses over there work in cash, the same way that people live day-to-day lives. And the interesting thing there was that they pay their staff in cash. You know, they have loads of cash around. And when you go to an ATM, you can get out 2,000 rupees a time, and that's all you can get every day. So for every person,
is it limited to 2,000 rupees a day?
Yeah, exactly. Which is not a lot, you know. Tourists can get more.
£20.
So yeah, £22-23, okay. Depending on exchange rate.
Wow, a day.
Yeah, which is mad. And but you know, over there, it's different to how much that's worth for here. Yeah. But certainly for your average person there, that's probably enough.
I mean, what do you do if you want to rent a property?
Well, exactly.
You go put deposits down and things like that.
Exactly. So it's a big problem. If you're buying anything big, you can't do it really. Hmm. And chatting to the businesses there. They were saying that's exactly the same for a business. So obviously a business needs way more than 2,000 in cash a day to do anything.
Unless they've got two staff, they need to.
Yeah. You know, when you're a hotel employing 30, 40 people, whatever, it didn't seem like there was a way for them to get money, which is mad. Like, you know,
wow.
It's just such a weird thing to have in place. And they were okay because they had a card reader. But the others were really struggling because no one could get paid, or they couldn't get the money they needed to give change to people, and all these problems that were coming up because of this. And you'd assume that they'd do one thing for, you know, average Joe and one thing for business, because mm-hmm. that's how it works over here. You know, you get far more access to money as a business than you do for a personal bank account. And I found that really odd, you know, that there
that's
wouldn't
mad.
Be certain allowances for what a business can have. I think it's also really affected tourism.
Negatively.
So, yeah, definitely. So being in Goa, which is like a big destination for tourists, I haven't been there before, although I know many people who have, and it seemed quite empty. It was Christmas when I was there, Christmas Day around that time, which is meant to be a, you know, nearly high season. I think high season starts now in January. But it didn't feel super packed. So I was just chatting to them, and you know, there were a lot of restaurants and bars there that had no one in them every night, and people were suggesting that this kind of cash situation has stopped people from coming because they know that it's really hard to get money, and they know that there are problems around traveling and all this kind of stuff. So
if you hadn't booked your trip months in advance and you were, you know, booking a spontaneous week there or something, would it have affected your decision?
No, I don't think so. No, not at all. I think you can still get by. You've got to be aware of it, and it depends where you are. If you're in a big city, you're fine because you can just pay for whatever you want with a card, really.
Okay.
And as a tourist, you can get, I think you can get 10,000 out a day, but you might just have to queue at a. Well, the annoying thing is communication there's pretty bad for a lot of stuff. So you go to an ATM, you can only get 2,000 or 2,500 on per transaction out on an ATM, although it will never really tell you that, which is great. So you have to like stick your card in four or five times and just keep on getting money out. So, you know, it's a bit of a pain, but you're okay, really. So I definitely would still go.
I'm surprised they got these limits, because this is where they get their money from. Mm. Tourists coming and giving them cash like that.
It definitely, some of the...
Do you think they would reduce the restrictions around the tourist resorts or something, you know, particularly because the hotels need the cash to pay their staff. They just need tourists to come and give them cash.
It is a lot of it's baffling as to some of the decisions that are made around it. Certainly right. when, you know, a lot of money comes from tourism in India, huge amounts, you know. So negatively affecting that, while it might be good for the long-term prosperity of the nation, you know, like some businesses are really going to struggle. And especially in places where there isn't money already. So, you know, it's kind of like you're probably helping people who are all right, mm-hmm. but are you really helping the people that need it the most? And there's yeah. a lot of them in that country.
Okay, so there's just one thing I wanted to ask you as well that occurred to me earlier when you were talking about particularly staying in Bangalore. Something that I know India has adopted is Uber. Mm. Big difference to previous services because it's built in that it takes money off your card automatically, so the cash issue shouldn't affect it in the slightest. Did you use it? What was your experience? Do you think that Uber-type services will do very well out of the situation?
Yeah, so I was very surprised that Uber was a thing over there, and I happened to see an advert when I arrived. Like a billboard advertising mm-hmm. it. There's advertising everywhere in India, like advertising the maddest stuff, like cement is big. I don't know why. But a lot of the advertising is moving towards advertising digital services. Mm-hmm. So like you've got adverts for things that you'd never advertise here, like building materials, plywood, cement, those kind of things, because it's a nation of building stuff. There's always building going on. Mm-hmm. So that's weird. But then you get like, you know, Uber is massively advertised everywhere. And so I was like, wow, cool, Uber's here. Like, that's awesome. Buying things in India is weird because you're usually haggling for every service you buy,
yeah.
Including cabs, definitely. So you can get autos everywhere. They're cheap. Cabs, they always go way over what you should pay, and it's really annoying. So I remember looking at the guidebooks and they're saying, like, you know, you should pay whatever for a cab from the airport to your hotel, and they're trying to get twice as much and you're trying to barter with them, and it's like, this is really annoying. Mm-hmm. So we arrived in Mumbai and I was like, let's just call an Uber because I've got Wi-Fi, it's all good. You know, I've got data on my phone. So did that and it was awesome. You know, like, I mean, I think Uber's a great service. There's good and bad stuff about Uber in general, but
I think
as a service they offer, it's brilliant, and that's why it's doing so well. And yeah, like they tell you how much it's going to cost, which like for India is amazing. So don't have to like go 60% on the Uber app and then they come back with a counter offer. And it was the cheapest way to get around there, definitely. So we used it loads. Mm. Whether that will be taken up by people, I don't know. So I don't know how well that's done. But certainly as a tourist there, that's something that I could see as being really widely used, especially as roaming costs on data come down.
Do the locals use it? Is that something?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any stats on that at all.
Okay.
My guess is they will, because it's heavily, heavily pushed over there. Like, mm-hmm. you know, every airport has loads of Uber ads there. You know, they've got loads of money, so they're pumping it into big billboards. So I imagine they will, but whether the price point on that is right for your average Indian person, I don't know. But certainly in Mumbai, I feel like it probably would take off because mm-hmm. The wealth there is obscene in parts. You know, I mean, as an aside, like the most expensive house in the world is in Mumbai.
Yeah.
That's $2 billion.
Oh, I can absolutely believe that.
I've driven past it. It's just, I mean, it's actually quite ugly. But it's mad to see that, you know, and there's some parts of Mumbai that are beautiful and some parts that are shocking, really. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was really interesting to see that was there, and it works perfectly as you would expect. You know, it was by far the cheapest ride I took in a car there, mm-hmm. By a long way. Like the prices they were quoting were a third of what the taxis were trying to get at the airport. But then again, compare that to what you do when you come to Heathrow and you try and get a black cab home. Like, you know, they'll charge me 50, 60, 70 quid to get to South London,
yeah.
whereas I know an Uber will take me for 25. So
yeah.
similar story, I reckon. So yeah, it's really, really interesting. Like there's a lot of people out there in cars trying to take you places in India. So whether Uber will take off or not, I don't know. But I think it's got a good chance.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a big fan of it as well here. I love the fact that I can go most cities, big cities. I mean, I did it when I was going through Prague and stuff like that. And we were trying to get buses and stuff. And in the end, we just got an Uber because we knew it was going to work. We knew what the price was going to be.
Yeah.
And we could see on that app that it was taking us to the right place, which is...
That's another big thing in places like that as well, you know. Because you don't know how to get around in somewhere like that. I mean, anywhere you go, right? But certainly in like places in Asia, like it's baffling to get around. Like the streets on top of each other, and you're like, I don't know what's happening here.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time you don't know if you're getting a good price or not for anything. So you get in the familiar app, opening it up and be like, cool, that seems quite cheap actually. And we got from the airport all the way down through the city in Mumbai to the hotel for like a fiver. So
incredible.
That's, you know, the price is so different.
You have the feeling that if you were a local and you could haggle, you could probably get this journey cheaper. But I'm not a local and I can't haggle. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's all over Asia, whenever I've been anywhere, you know you're getting ripped off. But it's fine because really we're very wealthy compared to them. We're in a very lucky position to be in.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're paying like £2 for something and, you know, you could have got it for £1.80, but is that worth?
You don't mind being ripped off a little bit because you are putting money into their pockets.
Yeah, exactly. Certainly there's that. You don't. I feel bad about haggling over 20p because really I can afford it, so it's fine. And it means a lot to people over there if you gave them a decent tip, which I often do when I'm around there. You know, you know you're making someone's day by giving them a pound or whatever, and it means nothing to you, but to them that's a sizable amount of money. I think it will be really fascinating to see how India develops over time with these digital apps, you know, digital payments and all that kind of thing, and see how they managed to cut down that cash-based society. And I think it's a really positive step as a nation. So I really hope it works.
That just brings me on to final thing, I guess. This is now no longer factual. I'm not going to hold you to this, but just in your opinion, do you think it was a good idea? Do you think it's going to work? I mean, ultimately, the goals have shifted, you said. So do you think it's going to achieve the original goal or the new goal? And as a consequence, do you think other economies in a similar situation should consider something like this?
Yeah, I think it probably will work. I think, you know, I'm not an economist, so who knows? I don't care what I think. From what I saw, I saw the situation go a lot better in the 3.5 weeks I was there, which is not a long time. So you got a sense of improvement, or certainly people getting to grips with the situation. And as a country which, you know, I've been aware of the kind of startup scene in India for a while, and knowing that, well, you know, all our outsourcing inquiries come from India on the whole. Like, it's a nation that has certainly adopted tech.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, education in India is a big deal. And it's a very different, without going into too much detail, like, society over there is very different to here. You know, everyone's, I would say as a nation, it's much more well-behaved. You know, people are good, honest people who want to work hard, make a good life for them, because it's hard to get a good life over there.
Yeah.
So the emphasis on life is family, education and work, on the whole, way more than here, because we don't have to think about that, right? Because most people over here have probably what I'd say an easier ride to a good career and much more opportunity than a lot of people do.
Absolutely,
in countries, developing nations. So there's a lot of emphasis on education. There's adverts for schools everywhere, you know, getting lots of diplomas and degrees in certain things. Hospitality is big, anywhere that caters to tourism, and also computing is massive over there. So there's huge opportunity for people to learn how to use a computer as a basic, but also how to code, that kind of thing. So I think that's where India's come from. I think they've put a lot of emphasis on developing a workforce of people that are skilled technically, and I think that's paid off. So there is a lot of I picked up a couple of magazines out there, which I didn't bring back actually, that were about the kind of startup scene in India, which is a big thing. Like, most bookstores over there, most magazine stores have loads of magazines based around entrepreneurship, have loads of books up there, you know, the kind of cheesy, you know, become the next big thing in startups. It's a really big thing that's ingrained in culture over there. So because of that, and that's just based on my crash intro to it over that time, I think it has a good chance of working. Because of that potential uniqueness to India, I don't know whether it's something that other countries could do. You know, whether that would work in somewhere like Thailand, Vietnam, or whatever other nations that are, you know, I don't even know if they're good examples. African nations potentially, which have similar sort of economic outlooks or similar economic situations. No idea if that would work at all. It's a way of trying to get through corruption, but I think if you've got a corrupt government, that's not going to work as well. And that's obviously a big issue in those sort of places. So, you know, I'm talking about things that I know little about now, but it's a really interesting thing to see happening, and I would imagine that other countries in similar situations would be seeing what happens in India and
waiting with bated breath to
see if it works. Definitely, because in theory, if you can do it, it's a massive change, and it's probably a really massive step towards a more secure financial situation for a country that has big issues on that front.
Yeah.
So I think it's the one to stay aware of and keep reading about.
Yeah, definitely. I think we'll keep our eye on it for sure.
Definitely.
Okay, thanks, Tom. And thanks you guys for listening. If you want to have a listen to some more podcasts we've done, you can find us on our website at wearelighthouse.com/blog. We're also on all the socials. We're on Twitter, Facebook, things like that, just at We Are Lighthouse. So yeah, check us out and give us any feedback you've got. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.